I try to set the pace a little bit when I come to visit with you as to a little bigger worldview of the Amway business and to kind of set the stage for some of the things we do that I think set us apart from an ordinary business in the world, because we have a mission that is bigger than just making money or just getting more business or seeing how big we can get. We're a cause that transcends those things. And so tonight, I've sort of entitled this Magnificence or Mediocrity. And I've chosen that because we're at a point, it seems to me, in the history of the world when major, major choices are being made as to the direction that we're going to take. Either the direction we're going to take as individuals, as to whether, for example, we're just going to say, well, I've had a good life, I've done okay, and I don't have much to complain about, and go like so many millions of people kind of go through life doing okay, but never reaching the heights or enjoying the magnificence that could be a part of their life. They're afraid to reach out for it, and it scares them, perhaps. They're secure kind of where they are. And my purpose tonight is to help you get rid of those fears and to challenge you to try to do and be better. But as I do that, I also want to encompass some of the things I see happening to all of us as a nation. Because this is the funny season. This is an election year. And it's going to be a tough year for all of us. Out of that, one of those guys will be the president. But it worries me a little as to whether they set a pattern towards magnificence or whether they kind of want to settle for mediocrity. And that scares me a little. And for whatever reason, as we look at this country today, we are in one of the most exciting periods in the history of the world. Beverly talked to you a little bit that I was visiting with a couple of major generals today from Russia who are pledging themselves to this concept of free enterprise and the dynamic and almost unbelievable changes they're attempting to make in Russia. And yet we have people in this country who waffle around as to whether they really want to get back over and be socialists at heart. And the whole world's turning towards us. And in the meantime, here's this crazy little Amway thing. Well, all the rest of the world's kind of coming down, and we're going up. And we're rolling like crazy. And I keep saying to myself, what's the difference? Where are we headed, and what's the goal for this organization? But more than that, you know, the organization can do well. But the question is, how are you doing? You didn't come here to hear me tell you that Amway's doing good. I'll bet you knew that when you came. You came here to find out whether you could do good. And that's why you're here tonight. And I've got to answer that question for you, at least try and give you my view on how you can do better. How you can not only make a better living, but how you can make a better life. Because in my view, they all go together. And while sometimes we're accused in this business of mixing life and living, making a living up, I think it's the feeling of this organization, and it's been ours from the beginning, that they all kind of go together. If you make a better living and you don't make a better life, maybe it's not worth making a better living. And so we got to find out how to put those two together. And perhaps as we go through this, we can help you kind of think it through yourself and set a new challenge for yourself that you're going to decide to go into the age of magnificence and not settle for mediocrity. I fussed with a few other titles, by the way. One was to call it Selling America 2. You know, it's almost 30 years ago that I made the speech Selling America. And it was kind of in a similar way. You like that talk, three of you. Listen. And I don't know how many millions of... I know there are millions of the tapes put out, and so they've been heard by lots of people. But as they said to me, some people, do a new Selling America, too. I said, really, I can't do another Selling America, too. Because in those days, we were only in America, and I could talk about how much better America was than the rest of the world. But now we're in all those other countries. And I can't put them down anymore. And so we have a new challenge. We got to figure out how to bring them all up. And that means we got to sell concepts that are worldwide and transcend the America's better than Russia. And that's the basis on which that talk was, because it was at that time in the history of our business, this little Amway business, that everybody was telling me that free enterprise was dead and that communism was going to be the way of the future. That this idea of America with its greed and self-centered attitude and the rich get richer and the poor get poor was going to go away, and this wonderful new thing of socialism was going to sweep the world. And it was at that time I made the first Selling America talk. And so I'm interested in picking up the theme, but in this different context today. And so let me take you in that history a little bit. Because at that time, Americans were wondering whether free enterprise in America as we knew it would survive. They were wondering whether the great hopes and dreams we cherished earlier would ever be transferred to our generation. Same junk I hear today. I wonder if it can keep going. And so if you look back a little from when we began this business and when we started first talking about the magnificence of our country, the greatness of our economic system, how it outperforms the world. It's maybe time to look back a few years and realize that, see, I'm a product of World War II. Well, I did live before World War II. But my adulthood began in World War II when I went into the U.S. Air Force. And that's where Jay and I first started to get our legs, as I think most of you know, but not all of you, because there's always new ones here. Following and during World War II, Jay and I were in a Christian high school in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But when I turned 18, I went in the U.S. Air Force, and Jay went in the Air Force, and so our military career began, and World War II ended, and what a magnificent time it was in history. The excitement, the belief, anybody could do anything, and the guys who came home from World War II exuded a power of confidence like, I don't know if I've ever seen that euphoric period again. The war was over. Peace was upon the world and all this. And while we had that mood in the United States as we watched the progress, and I say, then we went into a down period of melees in the country. And can we ever be as great as we were? And there's a shortage of raw materials in the world. And we're going to run out of oil and, you know, all that wonderful scenario that they laid upon us as to whether it was ever going to be as good as it once was. And it was in that time I began to tell it was going to be better and greater. Now, you've got to remember, at that time, Japan's a mess. It's blown apart. It's been bombed. It's disintegrated. Germany is gone, as we would know it. Italy's in ruins. Europe is a mess. And so I come to you today when I trace that history of what's happened in 40 years. And then I hear somebody bash the Japanese. And I said, what happened to your sense of history? 40-some years ago, they were a bombed-out ruin. And they have developed a new economic power, the second or third most powerful economy in the world. And all we can do is find fault with them. And what we really ought to be doing is standing and applauding and say, what a magnificent recovery you had done. And so instead of being proud of the achievements of the people in Europe who fought back and with the compassion and love of the people in this country and the Marshall Plan and foreign aid and General MacArthur in Japan, putting them forth on a new free enterprise economic system, granting them freedom for the first time women voted, taking a culture that had never known freedom, that had never known the independence and the values that we have are independent and human worth, that came upon that part of the world, turned it around completely, and it became this great achieving society. And so here we are today watching peace all over the world from major powers. The Vietnam is over and Korea is done and Russia is done as a powerful military force. There is no major power in the world. We're the number one superpower in all the world, and yet we feel bad. I wonder why. Why, when we do surveys of the people in this country, is there this down feeling? We got an economic recession, things are bad, and yet when our only unemployment is only about 7%. And they have touted it and blown problems up, and I know there are problems, but see, I'm an old guy. There have always been problems. And those of us in this business decided we were going to overcome the problems and we were going to go for magnificence. And we were going to move on. Now, as I said, it's a wonderful time to talk about the achievements of our society. And it's important that we determine to continue to strive to be the best. I guess that's my challenge to you. And for those of you that have become timid and shy because it doesn't seem like things are right, I was backstage a little bit ago and some new distributor came up to me. He said, "Well, I've been in 6 months." He, I don't know, he snuck back here somehow. And he says, I'm having a hard time. I can't seem to get anybody in. I said, do you ever have that? And I said, "You bet your sweet life." But we did a very simple thing. We went out and got some customers. I know that may scare you, but if you can't seem to get any distributors, why don't you do whatever you can do? And maybe if you crawl a little bit, you'll learn to walk and get some confidence, and you'll start the same struggle we went through. You know, I've had meetings and nobody showed up, too. Now, tonight I've had one and somebody came again, so it's kind of nice. Anybody who's anybody up front here has all had meetings and nobody came. We all had people quit. Sometimes several of them a day. But that didn't ever deter us from driving for magnificence. Now, if I look at the United States and what it's done since World War II, I'll just give you a few numbers to bore you and fill in a little time here. And we talk today about health problems, and we talk about other problems and what people can't afford, and they say the rich are getting too rich. And I never bought that baloney, by the way. I still don't buy that baloney. When the rich get richer, the poor do not get poor. There may be more people getting richer, and there may be a gap, but that is only born out of the minds of the people that don't understand that the wealth of a nation is created by people who go to work, who expand the economy. They don't take it from somebody. They build new income. Now, to talk about how far we've come and how much wealth we've created. We create wealth every day by you and me going to work. We turn things and add value. And that's how the whole economy, the whole world expands. But those who don't see the growth and can't imagine growth always think we're dividing up a pile. Well, but so many poor, we have so many here, and that's your little pile, and you're in that niche, you better stay there. And we come along and say, there aren't any lines, and you're not stuck in any category, baby. You can move any way you like. You can move up or you can move down. That's your choice. You can go for magnificence, mediocrity, or poverty. Line them up and pick your pick. Anyway, what have we done in this country? You know, in 1941, before World War II, only 9% of the people in this country had health insurance. Today, I know you hear all about the people who don't have health insurance, but 87% of the people in this country do have health insurance. That's a tribute to those people who either work for a company that can do it or who do it themselves. When this time frame began in air travel in the United States, the people flew about 3.2 million miles a year. Today, the American people fly 466. They flew 3.2 million miles a year. Today, they fly 466 million miles a year. That's how far we've come. You can't comprehend that. You know, DC-3 was hot stuff in World War II. You remember that? two rattly old engines. You had to have a periscope to climb up in the inside the airplane to get to your seat. I mean, I was there, kid. 7% of our people went to college. Today, 27%. And about 100,000 telephone calls were made a day. And today, 1.3 billion telephone calls were made every year. Now, those are just numbers. And so I want to reassure you that things were never better. We were never doing better in the whole world than we're doing today. And this is a magnificent time to strive to be and continue the growth to magnificence. But the question is, why did we get there and how did we get there? We got there as a people, and we get there because we developed a system that rewards and recognizes magnificence. And whenever we get into a downer, we get into the same thing we have right now. And so my question to you, are we going to be bashers or are we going to be builders? During this year, we're going to hear everybody, they're going to be bashing Bush. They bash Japan. It's just so popular to be a basher. And all I can tell you is I'm not going to be a basher. I'm going to be a builder. And I think you want to be too. If you're going to build your business, you've got to make a commitment now to being a builder. And that means you don't have any time to find fault with other people. That doesn't mean they aren't perfect. That doesn't mean there aren't things that should be corrected. That means that you don't focus your attention on finding fault with what somebody else does, and you figure out how you can do a better and more productive job. You focus on being a builder. Now, I fussed with another word. Or you can be a whiner. It's whine. Why do they have more than I have? Why do they have a better car than we have? You know, I love whiners. They just turn me on. It really is exciting to be with whiners. You don't know any, do you? I know a lot of whiners. I'm not going to whine. I'm going to be a builder. And if you're not happy where you are, cut your whining and decide to be a winner instead of a whiner. Now, that's just, I have my platform for being a winner. Now, you'd almost think I was running for office. You know, if you're going to run for office, you got to have a platform. I'm not running for office. I have a job, and I'm very happy with it. Now, here's my platform. I believe that free people make a country great, not government. People working make a country great. This country is strong because people get up and go to work every day. Beverly said to you, I stopped at the warehouse today, and I did. But I know amongst those warehouse people and amongst thousands of you here tonight that some of you have bad problems at home you're dealing with. You got teenagers that are breaking your heart. You may have a marriage problem that's on the edges of breaking and disintegrating. You've got young children that are giving you grief. You've got parents who are giving you trouble. Listen, we all come here with our own little bit of baggage. But you see, despite all that, you continue to go to work, pay your bills, keep your nose clean, and carry on your responsibilities. That's what builds a nation. Not what somebody does in Washington, but what you and I do individually each day to make our contribution to society. I'm not saying we don't need government. We need government. We have to pay taxes. That's okay. I'm not sure I like the way they spend my money always. But I know one thing. Ever since we started Amway, our checks have always been good. That's pretty good. Now, a couple of quick points. First of all, people make a country great. Second point, that I believe the people who do the work should get the money, and outside the responsible taxes, they're entitled to the money. And I say that because there's a feeling sometime amongst government people that it's our money and we're going to decide what we let you keep, as opposed to saying it's your money and we're going to take only the least amount that we need to run government. But it gets backwards so often that they think they're doing us a favor by letting us keep some of their money. It's not. It's our money. We created it. We created the wealth, and we're happy to share some with them. My also other platform is not really a platform point. It's just a simple statement because I get irritated on the rich poor thing. Most people who are so-called rich people got there by doing one simple thing. They saved some money. Now, that's not a very complicated thing. It is a miraculous thing, however, what you can do in your life if you just save a little money so the money makes you money. And if you'll do that, you'll become rich. And that is the great dividing line between rich and poor. Rich people made money and saved it. When I bought the Orlando Magic ball team, I met with my players, all of whom make, you know, $1 million a year or something. They just got out of college and, you know, they're not only, they make a lot of money, they stand tall. And I chatted with them. I said, how do you think I was able to buy this team? And they all kind of looked at me and I said, I didn't spend everything I made. That's it. Very complicated. But if you ever hope to buy anything of value, there's only one way to get there, and that is to spend less than you make. And if you do that, someday they're going to blame you, condemn you, and ridicule you for being rich. Join the club. And my other theme is that the primary emphasis has to be on people helping people to help themselves, not setting up a system where we help people perpetually and never set up a system that causes them to learn to be independent and develop their own means of sustaining themselves. And too many of our programs today do the opposite. Now let me give you a few examples and just hit a few on. Let me talk about medicine for just a moment. Because as I look at it, because it's the new hot issue, and I'm not trying to give a politician's speech, but I want to get back to magnificence or mediocrity. I elect, by the way, I'm the chairman of the biggest hospital in Grand Rapids. So I have some working knowledge of medicine. I know the kind of a hospital we run. It's a 500 and some bed hospital, hundreds of top-notch medical people, and we do open hearts and we do all sorts of procedures. Beverly told you about the new Helen DeVos Women's and Children's Hospital we're building. We didn't build it all, but we gave a little contribution, so we stuck our name on it. Or Helen's name on it. And that was fine. That's nice. Because inside that hospital are going to be people who are pediatric intensivists who do nothing but work with children. And you know how it is to figure out what's going on in your children's body when they can't tell you even where they hurt and what's going on and how to do that. And we will have in our deal new procedures where a young child can be carried by their parents and they will stay with their parents until they go under. And then they'll go into surgery, and when that child come back out, the parent will be right there instead of being separated from their parents like we could have.